This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
News Talk Saturday.
Now, would you like to live on forever? Immortality, an afterlife? What about a digital afterlife? So this is the idea that your voice, your memories, even your physical appearance could be in some way captured forever and live on in the digital space. What is that like, and what does it mean ethically and, of course, legally and regulatory? All those issues come to the surface. And I'm joined now by Andy O'Donoghue, who's a technology broadcaster and columnist, to discuss the implications. Andy, how are you?
I'm good, Emerson.
It's great to have you. This is, on one level, a very strange idea. Some people, it's a creepy idea, and some people actually think it's a very good idea, and it's some way for us to all have those precious family memories to live on in the digital space. Can you just give our listeners an idea of what an AI afterlife might look like?
What it looks like, essentially, and they're called, I suppose, death bots or grief bots, which is not the best naming, I think, that we've seen for new technology, but they are AI systems that are trained on a deceased person's digital footprint. And what that means is they are trained on the texts and the voice messages and the social media and the videos that somebody has created during their life. And this isn't just future tech. This is available right now, I think, starting at about €25 or dollars per month. And whilst it sounds like science fiction, it is actually a booming industry. It's called grief tech, and companies like Eternos in Palo Alto, they're already helping customers to create AI twins of themselves before they die. And I suppose, as you alluded to there, the question isn't whether this technology exists, but is it legislated for? Is it worthwhile? But it is absolutely available.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are immediately thinking of all the people they wouldn't want to live on forever. You know, they're waiting for them maybe not to be around much longer, but we won't get into those names. What I would like to know, I suppose, is the legal position on this. Like, do I own my own image rights, or do you own your own voice, or is it only when they're created intellectually on a computer or online that the ownership issue arises? So can you kind of talk us through that whole area?
It's a great question. And I suppose on one hand, the appeal is very obvious and very human. Grief is devastating. And for people, if they could hear their mother's voice again, or get advice from their father or their late father, or let children ask questions of a grandparent, that all sounds very comforting. But where it gets troubling is that there are no personality rights after death in most jurisdictions. Once you die, you have no legal protection over your identity. And your digital twin, of course, could say anything. Copyright only protects training data. A lot of discussion in the AI field about that. But it only protects training data, not output. So you might own the recording that trained the AI, but you do not own what the AI generates. And on many of these companies and offerings that you see that are available now, the terms of service are buried, often not by mistake. But people don't read them. And companies, I suppose, very much so, reserve extensive reuse rights. And so who owns the death bot, the grief bot? If you create it, if you die, does it belong to your estate? Can it be inherited? Can it be sold? There is no consent from the dead. And when a grieving relative creates a death bot, or somebody, and that someone never agreed to, whose rights are violated, if anyone's?
Yeah, and then you bring in the current contemporary debate about, you know, the whole deep fake area at the moment. You've got this whole Grok scandal at the moment as well. So you could not only have a death bot, but you could say and make them do all sorts of things. So that adds in another element to it as well.
Yes, it does. And about 7 or 8 years ago, I interviewed Max Tegmark, the MIT physicist, at the Web Summit. He had just published his book, Life 3.0, and he was warning about autonomous weapons and AI safety. And there was one particular question that I asked him. I asked him what happened to art and culture and revolution in a world that was dominated by artificial intelligence. And he was really interesting because one of the things he said was that we are at risk of our technology owning our owning us rather than us owning our technology. And I think that is very much what we could see here. California has just become the first state, late last year, October, I think, to regulate AI companion chatbots. That took effect just last month. And that requires safety protocols, age verification, possible prevention of misuse. That's a start. But where we are with something like grief tech, the problem, I think, is that people are perhaps at their most vulnerable when they are suffering from grief. And I think that's where the danger of legislation lagging behind by years is here.
Now, the other one, part of this problem is a lot of the content, whether it's videos or posts or just general text-based sort of content, it's owned by Meta, it's owned by, you know, X, it's owned by LinkedIn even, it's owned by Facebook. You go through all the names, Instagram. So they have, as I understand it, copyright ownership. You've posted it on their platform and they have then assumed ownership. So they will have a lot of this stuff and they can presumably deploy it in all sorts of ways because it's their property.
Interesting when if we consider that. And I suppose this is kind of around the idea of drift and distortion. And so AI over time will evolve. And so over time, the responses that a death bot gives could drift significantly. And it might, you know, the digital twin of somebody might gradually lose its resemblance to the original person. It might misrepresent their values. Like, you know, what if somebody's dead grandmother said something that she would never have said to her grandchildren?
The mind boggles, and it's quite terrifying idea you've just placed with yourself.
It does. And, you know, what if their politics completely change or their moral position? So there is, I think what we see here is the possible exploitation of perhaps what companies are creating is dependency instead of healing. And that's why people would create or use grief bots. But perhaps what we are seeing is something that's opportunistic. And there's a lot of research at Cambridge, particularly about this, and they've warned about the social and psychological risks of this. And grief tech might sound comforting at times, but it might also help, I think, the healthy processing of loss.
Now, we've seen this debate a little bit before in a different context where we have famous writers and people take their books and then they're turned into screenplays and then they come on the cinema screen and they've deliberately departed from the original meaning of the novel that was there and so on. So that's the point you're making, that drift idea of, you know, if you get a musical artist and they've deceased and that music is then available and the sound that they had. So that drift thing could really ruin someone's reputation post their death.
It could. And that is the whole, I suppose, the principle of, you know, maintaining or the potential for misrepresentation of values. And you know, that the moral position that the grief bot is in versus the living person can be very different. And who's responsible for that?
Now, a lot of people will say, relax, both of you, me and you, Andy. You know, this is like tribute bands. You know, the person is gone. They don't know any of this. Whether they're made do deep fake, whatever it is, it doesn't mean anything to them. They've left this earth. Yes, they have a family, of course. But as the generations go on, you know, they understandably and naturally lose control of who that person was. It's just the nature of the life cycle. So are we being a little bit, maybe getting a bit too worried about something that's just part of life and death? You lose control. They move into a different sphere. The memories dissolve, etc. I mean, I'm just conscious of people screaming at the radio saying, you know, it's like an ABBA tribute band. You know, you can't control it.
No, I think there are questions. I mean, we've mentioned, you know, how legislation so often trails behind technology, but I think there are important points about this. Specific regulations in relation to a cooling off period before a bereaved person can have a death bot implemented. You know, also clear consent, whether somebody does want to sign up for this service. So for both the deceased and for family who are left behind, retirement protocols. And by that, I mean, how do you end a death bot? You know, what happens to the data? And then also, I think we also need, and listen, we've learned a lot about social media in the last couple of years, even in the last week or two. So the psychological research, and before we scale something like this, what actual evidence is there on the effects on people? And of course, then I think ultimately transparency on business models and, you know, the incentives that companies have to push this service on forever and ever. Things like that, Emmett, I think, and avoiding what Max Tegmark said and not being at risk of our technology owning us rather than us owning it.
Now, another response to this might be, and I do see these ads quite a lot, they come down, maybe it's just my timeline, but I do see them a lot, which is, you know, to record an interview with an elderly parent or a grandparent, you know, sit them down, get pick their brains or their memories and get them to talk about the war, etc. And then you, the family, have this recording, whether it's half an hour, could even be a series of recordings to several hours, and you have that for all time for posterity. Do you think that's a good way to, you know, that would be your own intellectual property, presumably? Maybe it's not. We can discuss that. But it's a way almost of taking control a little bit more rather than just having scattered, fragmented bits all over the place.
I think, you know, grief is also a very personal thing. And I think, though, we always have to be aware that the potential for exploiting the vulnerable and the sad is there. And Emmett, so much about it, I can see the sense of, but also it makes me uncomfortable in ways. And subscription models that you know, keep bereaved people engaged, algorithms that could be optimized to maximize interaction time with somebody who's dead, you really do have to think about the morality of that. We have battled with the morality of social media and its potential for addiction over the last few weeks and years. And so we don't know in the long term if these tools will help or harm. An episode of Black Mirror shows how somebody becomes incredibly reliant on a deceased digital twin. You know, all of this is possible. The evidence we have right now is anecdotal, and I would say I'm somewhat fearful that we are running a psychological experiment on grieving people without controls, without oversight, and without any clear understanding of the consequences.
Yeah, it's a plunge into a dark place, and plunging in there darkly as well, not knowing what lies ahead. Certainly my production staff are saying, could we get Emmett as a digital twin next week? He might turn up more punctually and be more better briefed. So that's the other side of things. But listen, we'll leave it there. Thank you. Fascinating, if somewhat alarming, discussion for the future. What is the ethics of this whole area? Andy O'Donoghue is a technology broadcaster and columnist talking about the AI afterlife.
News Talk Saturday.